Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
I wish I could fly right up to the sky, but I can't. So instead, I will bring you the latest edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, reaching out every Friday from across a desolate, techless void, filling your consciousness with nuggets of purest golden tech. This is your 7-day tonic from the tech titans who bring you PC Advisor, Tech World, Macworld UK, and Computer World UK. Every week we throw aside our many differences, slights and grievances, avoiding tax and saving souls by forming a new audio religion that brings you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. You can hear us thanks to our sponsor, Audio Technica, and find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Don't forget, subscribe, review and tell your friends. Do it right now, listener. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the all guns blazing Scott Carey, online editor of techworld.com.
Hello.
The totes amazing Christina Mercer, online editor of computerworlduk.com.
Hello.
And the field of cows gently grazing, that is David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK.
All right.
This week we are talking Apple's new MacBooks, Europe and Google on tender hooks, and how you can find sweet, sweet love without relying on your god-awful looks. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. David Price. Return of the Mac. Oh, return of the Mac. Oh, return of the Mac. Oh, 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 oh. David, the Mac is back. What do you know about that?
The Mac is back, but slightly disappointing. Which sort of fits in with your singing.
What?
Say. Oh my gosh.
That was shots fired. Wow. Is that too much too early?
Mark Morrison kept Design for Life by the Manic Street Preachers off number one with that record. So it's unforgivable.
That is a shame, actually.
Yeah.
It's a good song. Manics get a lot of airtime on this podcast.
They do. Not enough. The Mac is back. What do you know about that?
Well, Apple has updated 2 out of 3 of its MacBook lines. The 12-inch MacBook, which we always has a sort of unstated pause at the end of it because it's neither Air nor Pro. It is just MacBook and then a space.
So
that's
like
been updated.
Like a bat. It's not a bird. And it's not a mouse.
It's neither fish nor fowl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's neither Pro nor Air. It's been updated. The MacBook Air has also been updated. But the MacBook Pro has not. And we've been waiting a while for these updates, and to be honest, the lack of updates to the Pro is a disappointment, but the other two are pretty disappointing too.
So what actually has been updated? New specs, new colours?
Yeah, well, yes, a bit of both. So we'll do the MacBook gap first. They have given it new processors. They've given it 6th gen Skylake Intel processors, which is what we were expecting, what we were hoping for.
But so that's a speed boost, but also actually it should improve battery life.
I think the main thing is, yeah, it's more efficient,
yeah.
Because they're clocked at the same speed as the previous generation models, but they should still be faster because they're more advanced processors. They have also improved the RAM. It's spec'd to higher speed as well. So those two things between them should result in, they're saying, 20% faster processing speed.
And which you probably wouldn't really notice, but you might notice if it lasts a bit longer off the main.
Yeah, well, they're saying it has 1 hour more battery life they're saying 11 hours of web browsing or 10 hours of watching films.
Well, for your average Mackies, that's quite a lot of time to write that novel in the Starbucks.
We always return to these Apple stereotypes whenever we're talking about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's also a pink one, I forgot to say. Yeah.
Oh, the pinkification of Apple. A pinkification.
I like
pink? It's sort of a gold pink.
Yeah, rose gold.
Is it rose gold?
Yeah. I actually really like it. I think it's really good. Everybody says to me, because I've got the, I have been borrowing the pink iPad Pro, and everybody always says that's ridiculous, and I show them and they end up going, oh, it's all right.
It's quite nice.
Because it's sort of muted and it's sort of metallic.
So you suggested that it was slightly disappointing update, and I suppose the point about that is, as we've discussed before, it's been quite a long time since the MacBook line has had a sort of radical design overhaul, or and also this thing of Pro Air blank is interesting as well, because, you know, I've read a few things suggesting that the kind of the airline in particular, it's sort of a little bit old line the tooth now, the whole kind of branding.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, let's talk about the Air next. The Air is now 8 years old and hasn't had, and I'm looking over at our producer Lewis when I say this, but I, as far as I know, it has not had any significant design changes in those 8 years.
Is that nothing at all in 8 years?
There we go.
Is that because it's absolutely perfect?
Yes, it is platonically perfect laptop. I like the MacBook Air, but it hasn't been updated in 8 years physically, so the design is starting to feel a little bit old-fashioned. And the update they've given it this year, 12 months on from the last update, is that they've made it so that you get 8 gig of RAM as standard. So you used to have to pay £100 to upgrade from 4 gig to 8 gig of RAM. Now it is included in the price, and that is this year's update.
But does that speak to something we've suspected, that there is something bigger coming down the pike?
We're wondering if MacBook Air might be getting discontinued at some point. The fact that they've bothered to update it, oddly enough, suggests, well, it must have at least another 6 months to a year left in it, because otherwise why would they bother to update it? But as I've just said, they didn't really update it very much. They've not given it a Retina screen, for example. So it's looking really backward compared to physically compared to the other laptops on the market, even though it's a nice design, as Scott said.
Yeah. If they were going to discontinue it, what would they be replacing it with on the sort of small laptop?
Well, the MacBook is it blank? That's the other issue. They're really in the danger now, Apple, of cannibalizing themselves. And I guess they've always said that they don't mind cannibalizing themselves. They'd rather lose the sales to other products within the Apple stable rather than to another company.
My physiology is not great, but if you're like trapped on a desert island and you start eating yourself, you can't live forever on that.
Presumably. Well, presumably you'd stay the same weight exactly all the time.
You'd run out of things to eat after a certain amount of time.
Yes, you would. Unless
you're Wolverine.
Okay,
this is. And I want to know more about that, but maybe not on the podcast.
Okay,
well,
sounds like a young person's reference to me.
Yeah,
that's
but
what I'm here for.
I but they have too many. It's felt by a lot of people that they start to have too many kinds of laptop, as well as actually now you mention it, too many kinds of iPad.
Mm. So like almost like pre Steve Jobs Apple. Away from that, but yeah.
Because I read this quote before I came in, which is that Steve Jobs once boasted that Apple was worth $30 billion, and which is obviously a ridiculously low estimate now compared. But he said they're worth more than $30 billion and they had fewer than 30 products, which is obviously not true anymore.
Yeah.
To an extent, he was a purist. He took that to extremes, but we're at the point now where, if we talk about the iPads, there's the iPad Air 2 and there's the iPad Pro 9.7-inch. They're the same size. They're physically identical, but they have different branding, and this is confusing. That, you know, the average man in the street goes into the Apple store, doesn't understand.
I don't understand why the names don't signify.
Exactly, it made sense before. You just said Pro, or you said Air, or you said Mini, and that meant the size. But now it refers to the specs.
So there's a couple of potential things that could be happening here, I suppose. One is that we're about to have some kind of deck clearing removal of those brands, which could happen. Yeah. As you say, the Air upgrade isn't in fact an upgrade. It's just that there isn't.
It's treading water.
Yeah, essentially. Potentially, there could be further complexity coming, I suppose. I mean, do you think Apple is a company that would consider making a hybrid device after all this time? Are they sufficiently challenged by like Surface and Surface Book, or is that a lot of kind of media talk fueled by Microsoft?
I think Apple has completed its response to the Surface.
Yeah.
To the Surface, at least, with the iPad Pro 9.7 inch. The Surface Book, I don't think, has made enough of an impact for Apple to...
Well, it's basically like quite a nice MacBook Air, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And Apple's MO, as we know, is that it waits for a market to be established.
Smartwatches.
Well, even there, a lot of people had gone there first, and it had got sort of mind share among early adopters, and people were talking for a long time, when is there going to be an iWatch, before it finally said, right, here we go, we've solved all the problems that people have in the smartwatch, which they incidentally they didn't at all. But I think with hybrid, that is so out there still, for me at least, that I don't think Apple's ready to do that. But yeah, I think definitely it wants to bring the iPads through to become laptop replacements. It's been quite explicit about that. And that does sort of, it leaves you thinking, what are the MacBooks for? Why do we have three different lines of MacBook? Maybe it'll end up just having the MacBook gap. You know, that maybe that's why it doesn't have another name. Yeah. It's going to be the only MacBook.
Interesting. Also this week in Apple News, we found out when WWDC is happening, so maybe we'll get the answer to some of these questions there. Yeah. WWDC being the big developer conference that actually these days is as much about letting the world know what's going on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. It's one of those weird situations where they're talking theoretically to the people in the room, but clearly to the cameras beyond.
And so that's happening in June, I believe.
Yeah, it starts on the 13th of June. We have the dates now, so you can put that in your calendar. And if you want to go, you have to enter a lottery. And if you win the lottery, you still have to pay. It's
world's most disappointing lottery.
Yeah, the first prize is that you have to pay $1,600 to go. But it's like five days long. Or whatever.
You could sell it to somebody else who entered the lottery.
I don't know how they'd feel about that. I mean, because you have to sort of be you're supposed to at least be a proper developer to go along. So if I sold it to some Tom, Dick, or Harry who was not a developer and they turned up and started showing up to all the courses and saying, "Well, show me how to use Swift." Surely that would look a bit dodgy. Anyway,
While we were on like the conference, I just wondered quickly going back to MacBooks, why it wasn't announced with all the other announcements. Why the delay between the iPad and the iPhone announcements and the MacBook? Because I remember our colleague Neil moaning about there not being a laptop announcement amongst the phone and tablet announcements.
I guess the obvious reason would be to spin out the coverage. Hmm. But I mean, with Apple, they're going to get the coverage whenever they do it. But they've split the iPhone launches between autumn and spring, presumably because they don't. I guess it doesn't make a lot of sense for a company to have all this hype building up to one product launch in one part of the year.
Well, I know it's sales cycle, but it'll have one part of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be difficult.
Apple's got shareholders like anyone else. It's nice if you can give them a bump every quarter. Yeah. I also think, and you're the expert on this, David, but my perception is that Apple likes to do cool, sexy stuff and give it a real show, and then it just slips other bits of information out here and there. You know, we get products. Some products are launched, they just appear on the Apple Store.
It's weird like that sometimes. And if they had been mentioned at the iPhone launch, then they would clearly have lasted about 2 minutes.
Yeah,
you would have got and there's a new MacBook Air, you know, and would have got lost in the kerfuffle, presumably.
Okay, well, we look forward to more Apple shenanigans, but for now, to give the definitive response, let's go around the room. Christina Mercer.
You don't know me at all, man.
Christina Mercer, Mac for good or holding Mac the tears?
Holding Mac the tears.
David Price.
Holding Mac the tears.
Mac for good.
Oh, nice. We've got a bit of a split. We never get a split in these things. Excellent. Okay, we'll take a short break while I learn Christina's name. and then we'll return and talk about Google and Europe. Christina Mercer. I'm thinking of changing my search engine from Google to G-Google. Just let that hang there for a second. Why?
I think you might be referring to the Google versus EU. There we go. Which basically it's it was just over 5 years sort of antitrust battle. I'm going to try and make it sound as majestic as possible. between Google and the EU, where Google have now they've been formally charged, but back in 2010, the EU probed Google about their dominant position for online search.
Basically,
they accused it of abusing its position. So, for example, with price comparison sites, they said that they're sort of taking away the search rankings for price comparison sites and pushing their own services.
Well, I mean, that is, I would say, true, mm-hmm. almost indisputably true. But then I guess Google's response would be that price comparison sites weren't really adding anything of value. They Google works to promote the things that provide satisfaction to users, and so it became sort of inevitable that over time Google's own search capability would replace the manual work done by a price comparison engine. But then if you're running a price comparison service and your business has disappeared because Google's doing it better, I guess you could see the frustration. So this started in 2010.
Yeah.
What's happening now then?
Now it's moved from Google Search to the Android platform.
Right.
So the European Commission, I'm going to try and pronounce her name, Margarethe Vestager.
Well, if you've got it wrong, none of us are going to know. So, Margarethe, know. If yeah. you're listening, get in touch.
Margarethe Vestager, yeah.
Yeah, it works, you know, it works. Yeah. She is the European Competition Commissioner, and she's basically said that the Android platform is being used to push Google's own services. I mean, it is a Google open source platform, but it's going against, it's like almost anti-competition.
But this is interesting because first of all, does Android have a dominant platform, really? I mean,
in terms of users,
in Europe? I don't know is the answer. We probably should know. But I appreciate it's going to have a lot more users than iOS and certainly than Windows Phone or BlackBerry. But does that... And so then the suggestion is that the cross-promotion of its other products, such as its apps, I presume, is somehow anti-competitive.
Well, what they put out a statement, did the EC, and they basically said that Google have broken the antitrust rule by basically requiring manufacturers to have pre-installed Google apps on their phone, by basically limiting phone manufacturers that they by on competing OSs basically,
right,
and also giving financial incentives for all this to happen.
So this relates to the fact that David, do iPhones come with some Google apps pre-installed?
They have Apple apps pre-installed, essentially, and not only are they pre-installed, but they are undeletable.
Yeah, like when you open an email,
if you
go straight
link,
to Safari, opposed
or to Apple Maps, for example.
Yeah.
So I've gone to the trouble of installing Google Maps, for example, I'd like that to be the default.
It's like that Stocks app you can't get rid of.
Yeah, and the Apple
Who uses that?
That Stocks app, as soon as Apple allows people to delete apps from iOS, that Stocks app is just
going to first against the wall.
Okay, so this is interesting. So this speaks back to, I guess, something you'd know about, David, which is the Microsoft antitrust issues, which were prevalent a few years ago.
Yeah.
And again, the case then was that Microsoft had a dominant position in terms of operating system, which, okay, let's establish Android probably does then within the European Union. And it forcibly or insists on pre-installation of its software.
Mm.
So presumably we're talking about maps and... See, the browser's interesting because there are usually two browsers on your Android device, one of which is Chrome and one of which is Android browser.
Mm.
So tools like that. And in the same way as Microsoft was... successfully prosecuted for forcing, in inverted commas, Internet Explorer onto all PC users. I guess that's what's happening now, is it?
Yeah, but the issue is with Google, it's the Android platform's open source, so it's meant to be voluntary, like you can use whatever apps you want, you don't have to... So that's the sort of rule it's breaking.
But you can... Yeah, okay, that's interesting, because whether or not Android, or indeed any Google product, is open source is interesting, because you can create a mod of Android and that's fine, it's perfectly legitimate to do. But yeah, I suppose the point is it's releasing code to manufacturers and manufacturers are selling it as the latest version of Android, which is Google approved, which consumers seek out because they don't want something that's different from everybody else's thing.
And they're actually paying them to make sure that they do it. You're saying they had financial...
Yeah, that's one of the objections that they're basically incentivizing all of this process.
I don't know enough about the legality, but is it not just basically monopoly-esque behavior where if you're in a dominant position you're gonna p-
push that forward.
Yeah, well, that certainly was the case with the Microsoft issue. Microsoft's point, just to, you know, obviously I don't speak for Microsoft, but their point at the time was, dude, we're just very successful. What are we supposed to do? And in the end, what you got there was this really weird, hobbled solution where they had to do two things from memory, one of which was they had to release a separate version of Windows that didn't have Windows Media Player. Literally nobody bought it. Because why would you? Why would you choose to buy a version that has less software?
Yeah.
And then the other thing was the browser welcome window, which was when you first booted Windows, you were given a selection of browsers to choose from. The interesting thing there is whether that was the main thing. I actually think it was more to do with the fact that first Firefox and then Chrome were better browsers than IE. But actually, that market has completely changed now. IE is the third in the market, which is fascinating when you consider that it is pre-installed in Windows.
Now they're killing IE, right?
Yeah, so Edge, yeah. IE and Edge together, yeah, okay. We kind of consider as one. Okay, so what does the EU want Google to do about this?
Well, firstly, they want them to address the charges, which they have done. They came back with a response, only a short one, basically just saying, like, no. That's not it.
Swing it.
Yeah, very much just be like, no, that's not it, guys. God, got it all wrong. So, and then...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
They want them to, well, basically, the penalty could be a fine of up to £7.5 billion.
Chump change.
Exactly. Or, and basically, they've got to change their, like, policies.
That's probably about the same as their tax bill, right?
Yeah.
So this is taxation by the back door. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
7.5. Who comes up with that figure? Yeah, we need to find Google something that's punitive. 7.5 billion.
But what does that equate to? That equates to the damage caused to other businesses.
Well, that's what I mean.
And they're going to give that to other businesses.
Are they Robin Hooding that money out?
Just, I don't see how this is.
Here you go, BlackBerry. Here's some money. Oh, bless them.
Bless them.
That makes me sad. Yeah. Because that's not going to happen. Google's not going to pay that fine, but it might. There'll be some sort of intractable negotiation that will go on that allows the European politicians to say, we've had a victory. And possibly, as I say, taking the Microsoft browser thing, whether it was directly as a result of that, but there is a lot more diversity in the browser market now, and that is probably a good thing.
I do wonder if any of that money would go to the Bloomberg Stocks app and be like, sorry, guys, we knocked you off most people's home screens.
This is the problem with all of these kind of things, is that on the one hand, yes, it is bad when big companies, and no one could describe Google as, you know, a good corporate citizen. You just can't, because they don't pay tax, and, you know, they're we talked previously about the attitudes towards privacy, and, you know, it's bad that a company, that an organization that doesn't respond to voters has so much power. That probably is a bad thing, but it's also like it gets punished for the fact that once you get so successful, you start acquiring or developing the best products yourself. And then, so if my Android device came without preloaded Google tools, I'm probably just going to download the Google tools.
Yeah.
But it is the probably, I suppose.
I mean, you can imagine that if there was, like on Windows, if there was a thing that when you first switched on your Google Android phone yeah. and it said, do you want Safari? Do you want Safari on your no. Android phone? No, thank you. And then that would that be the end of it? And then does Apple then have to do it? Because this is what I keep thinking, yeah. is that this is really unfair because Apple is much worse on this stuff.
But I suppose the difference is Apple makes the hardware and the software itself. So it makes a product so
that gets in the whole...
And it doesn't have the market share, I suppose.
They still have, I mean, yeah, I suppose. But they do have a very large market share. If, yeah. if you compare this to the...
Especially in terms of pounds spent.
Well, exactly. They have more yeah. of that than Android do. You compare it to Windows. Windows was much more dominant in those days than Android is now.
Yeah.
You know, Apple is not a niche player by any
But means. That's also the thing that I find. So like, I think there's a lot of this practice that is bad. I think the fact that, you know, in trying... So I have an iPod. There, I've admitted it. I have an iPod Classic. I'm an old man. And yesterday, in order to get some music that I own onto my iPod, I had to just jump through hoops because I have to get it onto iTunes. It's the only way I can get it onto the iPod.
And iTunes is pretty terrible
these days. Yeah, absolutely. So that, to me, from a consumer point of view, and also if I was a music publisher, that's a problem because I can only... A bit like we were talking about with Kindle the other week, the only real way you can sell an ebook is to deal with Amazon, and the only real way you can... make it selling music certainly to Apple users is through iTunes. That's problematic to me, whereas, and maybe this is just me being pre-programmed from having used Android, but the fact that I have to use Google's tools with Android is convenient to me. But then again, you know, maybe if you did, to your point about if you had to choose between Chrome and Safari, you'd choose Chrome, but maybe that would encourage other browser makers, including Apple, to put more effort into their products, and you might end up with a better product.
Might end up with, like, you know, Dolphin or whatever. Is yeah. Dolphin still going?
Something like Dolphin. That. Let's face it, I used to install Dolphin and Opera just so I could say, yeah, I've got multiple browsers on my device, and then used whatever the default browser was. So is there a timeline for things going forward, Christina, or what's going to happen now?
I think we're just waiting for a response, a formal response from Google, really. But yesterday, a couple of days ago, actually, News Corp filed a complaint, not about the Android platform, but about Google News.
Okay.
Saying that they are, well, pretty much the same thing. They're losing out on ad revenue because Google are pushing its own sort of like Google News.
Right. Google's not a content producer. That's interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't quite work this out because they were saying you were getting pushed down by Google's own content. Is that because Google have like content partnerships with people?
I'm assuming so.
Well, there's also that thing that we've come up against. We were talking about the other day in one of our, not to throw daylight on magic, one of our internal meetings. We're talking about the fact
inside
that
baseball.
It can be. It can. You know, one of the things we actively seek is to be. If you search a how-to term, often Google produces this what they call a card, which is the answer to the query that you've made. Mm. Actually, within Google search results, you don't have to go into the story. And we actively seek those out because actually what we've found is you get a lot more clicks through to your site when you have that. But that is Google taking content from a producer such as ourselves and publishing it outside of our network. So, and I think the thing that we kind of decide is that we hold our nose and we accept it because Google sends us all of our traffic and that is our business. It's not great to be reliant on a company like that, but that is our business. But I do wonder if maybe if you're a News Corp, it's part of this wider thing where lots of newspapers publish the same story. They publish different versions of the same story, and only one of them will get the traffic. And that's probably not a great situation to be in. Wow. I talked a lot there. Sorry about that, guys. Okay, so bringing it back to the antitrust issue, let's go around the room. Is it back off, Brussels, or don't be evil, Google? Christina Mercer.
Back off, Brussels. Felt good.
I don't know. Actually, I feel really torn on this one because I don't like.
You don't know whether to be I don't Brexit.
Like. Yeah, I don't like Brussels Eurocrats, yeah. And I also don't like Google terribly much.
Okay,
so I'm going to say something in between, which is
something in between would be the English Channel.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah,
I'll go with that.
Scott Carey, back off, Brussels, or don't be evil, Google.
Yeah, don't be evil, Google.
Excellent. Okay, we'll take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking about sweet love. Scott Carey, looking out for love, love, love. Big, big love, love, love. You've been checking out the state of the nation in dating apps and spotting some interesting trends. What's happening?
I don't particularly have a news hook on this, apart from the fact that I saw Sean Rad speak yesterday, who is the CEO and founder of Tinder.
Your man crush.
Scott's man crush?
Yeah, yeah, did you not know
disgraced,
that?
Disgraced sexual harasser.
Yeah.
Scott Carey? No, the other fella.
Scott loves him.
And he had some interesting things to say about the state of the dating app market. He completely disparaged all of his competitors, which is quite interesting, especially considering that Tinder seems to be sort of falling a little bit compared to the newer entrants to the market. And then he also got really annoyed when he was asked if Tinder is a hookup app, which we know from here that their PRs will jump on you if you call it a hookup app.
Really?
Because our old colleague Margie wrote a piece calling it a hookup app, and she was told off, and it is apparently a dating app. And Sean talks a lot about making meaningful connections in the most PR-ish way you ever can.
Oh yeah.
Why don't they want to be referred to?
Sounds a bit like hookup pipe, I think. That's a problem.
Oh, yeah, that is a problem. But surely there is more money to be made in...
Sweet, sweet love.
People performing the physical act of love than in than in romance. I don't know, maybe that's cynical.
Well, it's a long time for you and me, Dave, isn't it? You know, I mean, when we were students, one had to go out and drink 8 pints of Snakebite and Black, dance near a girl, and hope that in bumping into you somewhere the mixture of links and sweat that she could smell aroused her sufficiently to let you continue to bump into her in a more meaningful way. These days, swipe left or swipe right. Mm. Boom. You can be back in the pub in time for the meat raffle at the end of the night. It's
meat raffle.
An outrage.
Oh, where did you go to university?
In the 1990s, Scott.
So what I do find interesting is when, on this hookup thing, he says, you know,
it's not a hookup thing.
We're not a hookup thing. We're giving people the tools to meet, and then what they do afterwards is completely up to them. And then there's all this, there's very Daily Mail conversation about young people hooking up more now because they've got things like Tinder. Where do you guys stand on that? Is it because of Tinder that more young people are hooking up, or is it just another means of them doing what they would do anyway?
I think in general we live in a more quantified world where things are actually more commodified. So without wishing to be... It's very difficult not to sound prurient when in fact I'm just jealous. But I think the fact, you know, there was a lot of... When I was a young person, which was a long time ago, and it's not... Tinder's not exclusively for young people, but I think it's probably used mostly by young people.
Yeah, his biggest market is 18 to 25.
Right. You know, there's, in a way, there's something more healthy about having an itch and scratching it in a way that's... in a way that's mindful, and you know exactly that's what you're doing. And also there's a security implication about it, because I presume there's a kind of trail of information about who you're meeting, and you can decide where you meet them and stuff like that.
It's all driven by Facebook as well, so you have to be... so you can
actual person.
Yeah, and you... Well, as far as Facebook allows that. And then you, also you can see if you have mutual friends. So yeah. That's often a security blanket.
So it seems... To me, it seems, you know, perfectly healthy and reasonable thing to do. I do have a... You know, I know of... A younger friend of mine was saying he found it, and this was such a difficult conversation for me to have, but he was like, it's really difficult to meet someone, have a meaningful relationship, because it's so easy to have meaningless sex. And he said this to me. Me and several other guys in their late 30s, and early 40s, and like he barely got out of the pub alive because we were just like, you have no idea kind of thing. But it, you know, I can see that being potentially a problem, because once you once you're able to get all the sweets in the sweet shop, once you can afford to buy all the sweets in the sweet shop, you need something that's going to stop you buying all the sweets in the sweet shop, if you know what I mean. You don't know what I mean.
But is there still a taboo around meeting someone through a dating app? If you meet
your...
Completely. Yeah. I know multiple people who've got married off dating apps.
Yeah.
When was it? 2013? That's prime Tinder, wasn't it? Is that what it was? We were talking about
Tinder.
Is it
2013 like it would have been
a good year for those on Tinder.
Well, it was set, it was set up in 2012. So 2013, it would have been starting to gain a lot of traction. I think I mainly used it in 2014. Unfortunately, podcast listeners, I'm no longer a dating app user.
Just giving up.
No,
we've just lost half of our female listenership.
They've all gone.
Well, how heteronormative, David. Why does it have to be female to find Scott attractive?
That's right.
You're sitting quite close to him, to be fair.
True.
There's actually quite a large gap between us. An uncomfortable gap.
You want to get yourself on Tinder?
You can't see, but me and Matt are holding hands.
Absolutely. Oh, that's your hand.
There was a survey that came out this morning, a YouGov survey, done by another dating app, one that I'd never heard of. And that came out with 20% are looking for long-term relationships, 15% are looking for one-night stands. And that was their evidence that people are using it to look for more serious relationships than just for quick hookups.
What were the other apps that the boy Rad was talking about?
Okay, so the main one that he likes to have a go at is Bumble. And the reason because he likes to have a go at Bumble is because it was founded by
David Lloyd, the cricketer.
Yeah, that would be an accident.
It was very niche market.
I'm sure every time like you don't get a match, you just get told off by Bumble.
Start the car.
Well, every single match you get is David Lloyd. Would you like to go on a date with David Lloyd?
Inundated with requests
to non-cricket fans,
like Christina, who is looking plankton right now. Yeah. Bumble was set up by an ex-Tinder employee who left because she had a relationship with another Tinder employee, and then sued the company for sexual harassment and was apparently paid $2 million out of court by Tinder. She then went off, used that money to set up a rival app, which is called Bumble, which is very much more female focused. Yeah. So the women are in power, and if basically a man can't start a conversation with a woman, you get a match, and then it's the woman's prerogative to start the conversation.
It's interesting that that's referred to as the women having power, because in my experience, and this is before apps, this is just on websites, but my experience of dating on the Guardian website, as it happens, was that as a man, you spent all your time sending out millions of messages and trying to instigate things.
Mm-hmm. And it had just been you, to be fair.
Now I feel tragic. But all the women I went on dates with, they said that their experience was just fielding millions of these things. And so I always found it a bit weird to refer to one side or the other being impaired, because it was rubbish for both parties. Because you start off writing tailored messages and being really careful, and by the end of it you're just sending off all these messages saying you look nice, you want to have a conversation, and some of them reply, and for the woman as well, they're like wading through all these.
Well, I suppose idiots. In context, what Bumble's offering is an alternative. So if you're a man who's on Bumble, it says something initially about your approach to the whole thing.
I also think plenty of women Tinder, plenty of women on Tinder are just fielding multiple like inane requests from people, so then they, if they can just filter that out really nice and quickly, that's the idea. I think then the idea behind another rival that a lot of my friends use is called Happn, and
I like the sound of this one's interesting.
So Happn is obviously trying to cut through the noise a little bit. So the only way you can match someone is if you have been within a certain distance of them throughout the day. So if you were to walk past someone, it's so weird, isn't it? So if you walk past someone,
or stalk someone,
you have then happened upon them, and then you can send them a charm, and that's when a conversation begins. And that is the one that is best monetized, though, because you only get a certain amount of charms unless you want to pay for them. And I have an unnamed friend.
The gamification of dating.
I have an unnamed friend who has spent hundreds of pounds on charms. Oh, and his current girlfriend, he did me on Happn. So investment well spent. So I think actually the question at the end, I'm going to hijack you.
Okay.
Is if you could use a dating app now, which one would you use? Tinder, Happn, or Bumble?
Oof.
I go Bumble, I think.
Yeah. Could I... And they're the only options.
There are many, many more options.
So I can't just write in the back of the Times or anything like that.
You could.
Taking it old school.
Rush Hour Crush.
What's the one on Metro?
Rush Hour Crush. Were you the attractive blonde sitting on my tube?
Oh, so I was on my tube.
Didn't even mean to do that. I quite like the sound of Happen for two reasons. One, because I reckon I could gamify it and just start making it my mission to get physically close to attractive people without them realising it and then sending them charms. But also,
that's my mission anyway.
Exactly. Get within smell range. But as discussed previously as well, both Christina and I, hailing from the Broad Acres, we quite like the Appen nature of the Yorkshire, the word. Yeah. Dave?
As I said, I predate this stuff, but Tinder, I like the sound of the simplicity of Tinder. I like that it just boils it down to just one physical motion.
Well, you'd hope for more than one physical motion.
But I remember I lived with a gay guy for a few years, and we used to talk about this stuff, and he used to say how much incredibly easier it was for him than it was. I'd be there on the Guardian website, you know, crafting these messages, and he'd go, I think was it Grindr the name?
Yeah, Grindr.
And everybody was saying, when is there going to be a straight Grindr?
There's actually, an interesting tech point, apart from all the inanity that has happened, that Grindr did an incredible job of actually cornering a market.
Yeah.
Whereas dating apps, no one has managed to corner a market. Tinder are probably the dominant player, but it is such a busy space, and no one has managed to be the dominant player. The problem with a lot of them is that they become the flavour of the month. So Tinder was the flavour of the month a few years ago, and now a lot of my friends who still use dating apps all say, you know, Tinder's over, we're on Bumble or we're on Happn. And what tends to happen is these apps tend to be a victim of their own success, and they get absolutely, well, the male-female balance goes completely out the window, and they get flooded with bots and things like that. So you're spending so much time trying to find someone that it's a complete it's a complete time suck.
Interesting. Great chat. All right, let's quickly go around the room then. Dating apps. Free love on the Free Love Freeway or Balls Out on the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Christina Mercer.
That's your best one, yeah. Free Love on the Free Love Freeway.
David Price.
I think I'd go with Hot Love on the Hot Love Highway myself.
Ooh, okay.
They're still positive. They sound great. They sound such fun.
Yeah.
I wish I was young.
I know. Miss those days.
Maybe have a midlife crisis.
Yeah, I think I will.
Free love on the Free Love Highway.
Free love on the Free Love Freeway. Wonderful. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, listener. You're great. Do get in touch. Let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud and all the other places from which you source podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe, review us and tell your friends. Tell your friends right now. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
See ya. UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.